The Capital Investment Committee hearing for March 25th is called to order. We do have a quorum. Vice Chair Ryer, can I have a motion to approve the minutes for March 20th?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the minutes for March 20th, 2024.
Vice Chair Ryer moves approval of the minutes for March 20th. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed say no. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Members, we have a very packed agenda today, and so we'll start out with two state agencies to present the governor's recommendation. Welcome, Major General and Director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Hey, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Major General Sean Mankey. I'm the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard. Thank you for taking the time to hear us today, and I'm going to turn it over to my Executive Director of Department of Military Affairs, Mr. Don Kerr.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Don Kerr, the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. And Mr. Chair, we're going to kind of go through and answer the questions that you sent out to each of the agencies, but we're going to do that based on each project in the following slides. We felt that was the best way to articulate where we're at. But if there's anything I don't cover, please feel free to call me on it, and we'll try to get an answer to any questions that we don't answer. So we're going to go through the status of our current projects that began in 2020 and also 2023. The first one, Mr. Chair, is the Fergus Falls Readiness Center. This was originally appropriated in 2020, and we got some supplemental funding in 2023. You will note that we have completed this project and are pretty comfortable now that we probably will have money remaining on the table that next year we'll be able to recoup back to the committee based on the way the project came in a little bit under budget. The Moorhead Readiness Center, we're in the final stages of completing this project right now. We're less comfortable with that bottom line remaining number because we do still have some work to do in that, but we still think there's going to be what I would consider a substantial amount available to come back to the committee next year. The Rosemont Readiness Center, we've really just kind of begun to get into, but we have encumbered most of these proceeds. We did have a favorable bid come in on this, so I'm not in a position to state right now whether we think we're going to come in under budget or not. But we are proceeding with this project. It's a big one, obviously, and we'll keep you updated as we move through the process of getting this project complete. The Marshall Readiness Center was the one that was really delayed from the 2020 proceeds. We couldn't get started on that at all, and so we've really just begun that. We did have a favorable bid opening, and I believe that we have a contract signed, and so that notice to proceed should be going out very shortly. We do expect there to be about 18 months of construction here, so somewhere around September of 2025 to have this project completed. But you'll note a very low encumbrance rate because we didn't have that contract signed yet. The Arden Hills ACFT Fieldhouse. This is a project that was funded out of last year's bonding bill. We are proceeding on this pretty much as fast as we can. The procedure or the process is with the designer selection board right now, and it has been announced in the state register, and you'll see the closing dates down there in the lower left-hand quadrant. So the proposals from the potential bidders will be due on 4/8. This is for the design of the facility, and a selection for design should be done sometime in mid-June. That will allow them to begin the period to design the facility, and we feel like we're in pretty good shape from a timing perspective of where we're at with that, but no indication yet as to whether we're high, low, or indifferent regarding the amount. We feel very comfortable with the amount, but we don't have any facts to base that on other than our own work. The Minnesota Military Museum is a little bit more complicated because there are three different tranches of funding involved in this. The first was $13 million in bond proceeds from the 2020 process, and we are concerned that we may not have all of those proceeds encumbered, and so have requested an extension in that just to kind of keep everything aligned. As you know, once we determined that we were insufficiently funded for the scope of the project, we put the design on hold until we could determine how much funding was going to be available. We feel very comfortable now after last year's legislative session between the $14 million in cash and the $5.7 million in bond proceeds that we now have an end state number and have advised everyone to move forward. We do have the construction documents completed, and those will be going out for bid sometime here in the next couple of months. Again, planning a grand opening for the facility, Memorial Day 2026. So still a lot of work to do here, but satisfied that this is moving forward in the correct pace. With that, Mr. Chair, are there any questions about the ongoing projects?
Please proceed.
Yes, sir. 2024 Governor's Request. This is a new deal. So we originally had two armory proposals, one in Hibbing and one in Bloomington. And we did, after consulting with the city of Hibbing that they have some interest in our property there rather than put bond proceeds into it. Went back to the governor's office and asked to make a change to our program, and the governor has approved that now. So our proposal now looks like $3 million for design to build new hangars in Duluth to support the 148th Fighter Wing there. This is just cover design only. There'll be another request in the future for funding to build. So right now, this is the verbiage of our report, and I'll leave that in there. Of note, this is the one of the fighters of the 148th Fighter Wing. This one was authorized to be painted in a particular heritage paint scheme to celebrate the 75th anniversary of the 148th Fighter Wing. This will stay in this livery until September of this year, and then they have to paint it back to gray. But this was an important milestone. And interestingly, this photograph was taken of our 75th anniversary fighter at the 50th anniversary of the first flight of the F-16. So some of us think about F-16s as being pretty new aircraft, but they're not.
Wow.
This is the proposal that we're replacing. So right now, there is a series of three-bay hangars there. You'll see they're in pretty rough shape. These are original steel buildings that were built by the United States Air Force back in the 50s and were moved to their current location and are really inadequate and somewhat dangerous. If you'll notice that center photograph, you'll see there's standing water right underneath the electrical service to the building. And so that can be pretty dicey if you have to go turn the power on or off while you're standing in the puddle. And what we're looking to the future on is not building these for F-16s, but for building these to what is called the Universal Fighter Standard, the United States Air Force. The likelihood of replacing the F-16 at some point in the future, if that happens, will happen with either the F-15EX or the F-35 or a fighter to be named later that has not yet been designed. Mm-hmm. So we went forward with that in mind to try to posture the wing for selection for one of these future fighters, and this is what we came up with. So this, if you look at the detail on this, and there are slides in your packet, it shows that the F-16 in the center of each of these hangars with the safety overprint for the largest fighter that we're considering. So they will be big enough to support any fighter that the Air Force decides to send there with what we know today, and three bays wide. And we are leaving the possibility from a land perspective of potentially seeking for future federal funding in the event that we need more than three bays. So the question is, why are we funding this hangar? And the realistic answer is because the Air Force is not in a growth mode. The Air Force has announced publicly that they're divesting of a large number of wings in the United States Air Force, and everybody that has one right now is fighting for their survival. We're at risk of losing the 148 because eventually the Air Force is going to divest of all of their F-16s. The good news is we are currently flying the newest F-16s in the United States Air Force's inventory. So if we went down a path of getting rid of the oldest ones first, we'll be the last ones to divest of our F-16s. I'm not saying that's exactly how that will go, but we're in a pretty good position there. What's significant about that is right now the Minnesota Air National Guard is Duluth's seventh largest employer. The economic impact of losing the flying mission in Duluth is very substantial. And just in one aspect alone. So right now, the fire response at the Duluth International Airport is provided entirely by the 148th Fighter Wing and paid for by the federal government. If that flying mission goes away, there will no longer be a requirement for us to have a fire department there. And the city of Duluth, the Duluth Airport Commission, or the county will have to figure out how they're going to pay for that. And I can tell you right now, we spend about $3.6 million annually supporting that firefighting mission, to say nothing of an untold millions of dollars of investment in our fire station, which would probably become available but would likely have to be sold, and the ongoing training, multi-million dollar fire apparatus that are owned by the federal government that support that mission. So we think it's very important that we not lose that flying mission in Duluth because it would be a huge burden to the citizens of Duluth. Mr. Chair, these are some members of the House that visited the 148th last fall. There's another picture of them in front of that beautifully painted fighter. And a gratuitous shot of S-16s flying over the bridge. Mr. Chair, that completes my briefing. Do you have any questions?
Thank you, Director. Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. You did a great job answering my questions, but let me just elaborate. How long would these new F-16s last, and how many is your entire inventory made up of these newer F-16s?
Director Kerr.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, the entire inventory in the wing are basically the last F-16 Block 50s that rolled off the assembly line to the United States Air Force. There are other nations flying newer F-16s than the United States Air Force. The service life, they were all built in 1991. So the airplanes they're flying today are 30 years old. How long will they last? It kind of depends on what investments the Air Force makes in service life extension program. We don't think we're in imminent danger. I think that we are probably measuring that danger in decades rather than years.
Representative Carroll.
I think it's like what I'm trying to do with my car, is extend the life of it. Thank you.
See, no other question. Thank you, Major General Mankey and Director Kerr, for coming before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next on the agenda, we have the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Chair Lee, members of the committee, my name is Ben Johnson. I am the Interim Deputy Commissioner of Programs and Services and Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Here today to walk through the capital investment requests for the agency for this coming year. And I will try and touch upon some of the specific questions that the Chair has been requesting from various agencies relating to the calendar year 23 appropriations as well as plans for this coming year. So a quick reminder to those in the room who may not be familiar, MDVA serves Minnesota veterans, their dependents, and survivors by connecting with the benefits that they have earned. We are serving Minnesota's nearly 300 veterans and their dependents, and of that portion, I think of most importance here today are those nearly 1,000 that we are or will be serving in the state veterans' homes. We also have specific assets in veterans' cemeteries throughout the state. So you'll note on the map, in your packet, we are a statewide entity. We have resources through all corners of the state, including our three newest veterans homes that are coming online as we speak. You'll see that top center one, that is Bemidji. Left just below the star is Fergus Falls. Below that is Montevideo. That flag just below the Montevideo location is our newest state veterans cemetery. And then down in the right-hand corner, we've got the Preston Cemetery, recognizing Chair David in the audience. Thank you for your support, sir. We are a statewide entity, and as a result, we have an impact in communities throughout the state of Minnesota. And I think that it's important to recognize that in terms of contributions to capital investment needs and asset preservation in particular. So the agency this morning is going to talk about a couple of items in particular, asset preservation and a wholesale renovation of Building 16 at the Minneapolis Veterans Home campus. And I won't belabor the point here given the 10-minute time frame, but I want to talk specifically about how we as an agency work within the confines of the administration's approach to asset preservation. Again, this will be something that you have seen from other presenters throughout the enterprise. But of critical importance here is this negative impacts on service delivery. That item number two, I think, is most important in terms of Minnesota veterans' homes. The service delivery to Minnesotans in item two, in this case, is our residents. These are aging veterans living in our state veterans' homes, as well as the staff and families who work and visit those locations. Again, as has probably been established for this committee, our priorities are established by the agencies. That is, we as an agency have identified the highest need projects within within our campuses and our healthcare system. And then the timing and design of those projects is wholly dependent on need as well as the appropriations assigned through the general fund or bonding process. And that last item, I think, is critical to answering some of the questions posed by the chair over the last couple of months. Encumbrance versus project starts. The biggest challenge we have as an agency is that it is an inconsistent funding source in terms of bonding. So we at all times have a raft of projects that need support, but it is again dependent upon how much the legislature is able to support us with. So, for example, in 2023, we were able to secure $12.3 million in asset preservation funding. And of that funding, we have targeted projects. More than 40 projects through the state process, and we have done project initiation forms in the neighborhood of. Well, I don't have the final outlay there, but of the $12.3 million, we have PIFs, or project implementation forms, submitted for 70% of them. And again, the average cost in there of these core and critical items is anywhere in the neighborhood from $50,000 to $60,000, to as much as we've got at least one project in there with a $154,000 price tag, and that's at Building 2 at the Minneapolis campus. But again, the process is not linear. As you're well aware, the agency does not spend money that it hasn't been appropriated. But on a rolling basis, over the last 15 years, the agency has secured nearly $50 million. So since 2008, we have secured nearly $50 million and have utilized almost every penny of that within the time frame allowed through the bonding process. So I'd like to focus again on asset preservation agency-wide. I've already shown you a map of where we are located in the state. That's 71 buildings, 1.4 million square feet, and a replacement value of coming up on $500 million. 12 of those are 24/7 occupancy. Again, that is residential rooms, buildings for our state veterans living in either our skilled nursing facilities or our domiciliary program. We also have Building 4 at Minneapolis, which is a historic building that offers our adult day center. Again, these are not residents, and it's not 24/7, but it does have vulnerable adults in it every day of the week. Our recommendation, the governor's recommendation for asset preservation this year is $12.8 million. And again, this is for those homes throughout the state of Minnesota. The bulk of these requests would be used for the historic portions of the Minneapolis campus, which some of we were able to show a couple of weeks ago. Again, that campus has been in existence since 1886. So there's a pretty significant component of those buildings that are historic, and the entire campus is a historic campus. Again, some examples of projects in our asset preservation portfolio include the least attractive items in terms of bragging to constituents about the work that's getting done, tuck pointing, roof repairs, major communication system replacements, things that are not necessarily obvious to those who don't work and live in these locations. But again, some of these buildings date to the late 1800s, early 1900s, and are in significant need of preservation. And again, some of the details related to this request. We've got $116 million in deferred maintenance throughout the state of Minnesota, and we've identified nearly $57 million that is crisis or poor. So this committee, I know, understands the FCA process, understands how we develop our needs. And then again, we go through and prioritize those that are life safety or mission critical. The second request is a remodel of Building 16 on the Minneapolis Veterans Home campus. This is our DOMS program annex. The primary DOMS program is in Hastings. We also have the capacity to host up to 50 residents at the Minneapolis campus in Building 16. And some additional details. I'll steal a Don Kerr word. This is a gratuitous photo of the damage done to a floor when we had a waste line rupture. What we've done is done evaluations, and the project evaluation process for the HVAC system identified a lot of other significant needs as well. So These are the sorts of things that we're trying to resolve at buildings 16 on the Minneapolis campus. Thank you for the time to present to the committee this morning. Chair Lee, thank you for scheduling the visits to the campuses and throughout the state of Minnesota during your tours. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Members, any questions? Seeing none, thank you so very much for coming before us.
Thank you, Chair.
Members, now we'll move on to hearing several GO bills on an informational basis only. First up, we have Representative Bennett, House File 1841. And Representative Bennett, I understand you have an amendment coded H1841A1 for reference. Welcome. Please proceed. And members, just so you all know, too, we'll be allotting 5 minutes for each bill presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, and good to see you all and staff as well. I always enjoyed my time with our bonding team on travels, and I miss you all, so great to be with you. I am here with the mayor of Waldorf to present the Waldorf Phase 2 project. I believe 4 years ago, Phase 1 received some bonding funding. This is an infrastructure bill that's preparing for things like affordable housing. And I do have that amendment, Mr. Chair, I know, just for the knowledge, not to bring it before the committee at this time, just to line up the language the way the city needs. So I'm just going to pass this on right now to Mayor Rob Wilkinson, because he can much better explain the project than I can.
Yeah. Welcome, okay. Mayor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chairman, and other people as well. Again, my name is Rob Wilkening, Mayor of Waldorf, and member of the board of serving Region 9 Economic Development Commission for South Central Minnesota. Hopefully you all have received a request for funding of HF 1841 distributed to everybody. That's great. And just a little bit of history, too. We are just wrapping up our $15 million infrastructure plan, and this is basically the phase two of to complete that plan that was outlined. Waldorf is located 20 minutes southeast of Mankato, so we're feeling that growth of Mankato. It's exploding. We're also located 15 minutes from Janesville, 17 minutes from Waseca, 30 minutes from Owatonna, and 30 minutes from Albert Lea. Our location is prime for affordable housing compared to other cities described above. The city of Mankato is growing in our direction at a fast pace. In our city, we have no homes available for sale and only one lot left to build a new house. Our prices are relatively very affordable to have homes for new families, and that's what we're seeing. The older homes are getting sold. They're actually remodeling them very beautifully and living in those homes. Our proposal includes housing for families with 2- and 3-bedroom apartment building, including senior citizen housing with some housing lots. Our proposal includes a business park for a few businesses that, such as a convenience store, which we don't have and we desperately need, among others that are tailored to help the residents in our area. Our population includes our townships and our fire department, which serves the 72-square-mile radius, quite a large radius for our fire department. We have a strong fire department and adds up to 1,300 people in our area. In our city, our medium home income, our house income is $45,000, and we expect to see that increase as new families move in and they make additional amounts of income, especially the ones that are working from home, because we have high-speed internet in our town. And once we've established that, it's amazing the jobs that are available for people to work in our area. The median age in our city is age 40. Furthermore, the city around us needs workers that they can drive to, and Waldorf is like right in the middle of all these other major towns that provide really high-paying jobs, and I think that's a big asset to the area. We have within the city limits 100 acres of undeveloped land planned for our Phase 2 project. With half the support coming from the federal government, we are looking for the other half from the state of Minnesota for your help, and that amounts to $3.774 million. I think it's a wise investment for the area. And housing and economic development was a key topic of Governor Walz's speech to the League of Minnesota Cities a few weeks ago, which he outlined the importance of affordable housing and economic growth for rural Minnesota. And I think that's a really important thing. Last year, the bill was missed due to changes in our congressional district, and so we please ask for your help to continue to complete the phase one part of this overall infrastructure project by supporting phase two, House 4, 1841 bill. And one last thing, too, we're so excited. We have a amateur baseball league that broke ground last fall, and they're building a new stadium with bathrooms, concession stand, and we're excited about that, and they're scheduled to have their first pitch in 2025. So you can see that the people are looking at Waldorf, developers are looking at Waldorf because of the growth of the area. And so we really, a small little town like us, it's really hard to really support that kind of infrastructure. With the first initial phase one, we've already have a $3 million bond that we're supporting through the water bills and sewer bills of our residents. So we are contributing our funds to help pay for the $50 million that we just underwent. So, and I want to thank you, and I welcome any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mayor. Members, any questions? Representative Scraba.
I'm sure it's no big deal, but maybe I have these two papers. They're different, right? If you go to Business Park Street Utility Extension 1.7, that's under House File 1841, 1.7 million, and the other is 186. And if you follow it over to the right, it's 1.831. And then in the new or the other one, it's 1.6 plus 186, and it's 1.831 to the far right. I haven't had time to find out where the math is going to. It's right in the columns, but it's not right over there. Just not a big, just I wanted to call it out.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Scraba. Seeing no other questions, quick closing comments, Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for hearing this. And Mayor Wilkening, I changed your name for you, but we'll keep it Wilkening. So thank you so much.
Thank you,
Representative Bennett. Yeah. Next on the agenda, we have Representative Keough, House File 4436. Welcome, Representative Keough. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I live in the beloved Red River Valley. And flood mitigation is always a conversation, even though it's a bit dry this year. And we didn't even see any snow this morning, just a dusting. So, but I appreciate, Chairman and members, you hearing this bill, 4436. It will provide $57 million for seven multipurpose water storage and flood mitigation projects for the Red River Basin. The Red River is a precious area, and I appreciate it, but it is very flat. And if you were up there, and I know many of you were, you can see for miles. And but it has its challenges with preservation. So, and today with me is Robert Sipp, who is the executive director of the Red River Watershed Management Board. And so with that, I will let him explain the project.
Welcome, Director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Robert Sipp, and I'm the Executive Director of the Red River Watershed Management Board, which is a joint powers board of seven watershed districts in the Red River Basin of Northwest Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House File 4436. The board has identified seven projects as high need in the Red River Basin that will result in 100,000 acre feet of new water storage, just about 15,000 acres of wetland and grassland acres created, restored, or enhanced, 75 miles of stream rehabilitated, created, restored, or enhanced, 17,700 pounds of sediment reductions per year, 16,000 pounds of phosphorus reductions per year, and 117,000 pounds of nitrogen reductions per year. We fund our projects through a variety of sources, but the Flood Hazard Mitigation Program is a critical funding program to local government. The program, managed by the Minnesota DNR, benefits public and private infrastructures in cities, communities, and rural areas statewide. Our projects are included on the DNR's priority list, and we have introduced this bill to highlight the great need in the Red River Basin for these multi-purpose water storage and flood mitigation projects. These projects will move the needle towards meeting local, regional and statewide water quality habitat, water storage, and flood mitigation goals. These projects will also result in resiliency to climate change impacts and will help preserve social, natural, cultural, and financial capital in Northwest Minnesota. Every $1 invested in hazard mitigation saves $6, according to the National Institute of Building Sciences. And just a note on inflation, that has been a difficult thing the last couple of years. Inflation has decreased in 2024, but the previous 2 years saw inflation for our type of projects at 9.8% in fiscal year 2021 and then 12.3% in fiscal year 2022. Inflation has significantly impacted total project costs, and we need to get these projects to the finish line so that climate impacts to our landscape can be reduced. We also have the local match in place for these projects and are ready to roll with construction. When these projects are completed, it'll be a win for the state of Minnesota and the Red River Basin. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions of the committee. And thank you.
Members, any questions? So, Director, what does it mean for in the bill line 1.15 to 1.16 for community grant to remove the city of New Fulton from the 100-year floodplain to the watershed district?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So that project is ongoing, and once that project is done, it's incorporating a flood impoundment or water storage area, and then also there was a bridge replacement project that was done as part of the overall flood damage reduction. And so once the project's done, the residents will no longer have to purchase flood insurance, and they'll be removed out of that floodplain.
Thank you. And then, Director, is it safe to say that of these seven projects, these are in priority orders, or can you give us a list that if we were to consider this, which projects are ready to go first and then, you know, from first to last?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we can definitely get a list to you. And while this is the priority list, we can further look at prioritization.
Thank you. Seeing other questions, any closing comments, Representative Keough?
No, I thank the committee for considering this, and I appreciate all the flood mitigation Minnesota has done in the past and future so that we preserve the integrity of the Red River Basin. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keough. Next on the agenda, we have House File 4833. Representative Baker. Welcome, Representative Baker, and I understand that you do have a DE amendment coded DE1 for reference, so please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Yes, the DE1 really just modifies the language a tiny bit, but really it shows that we've got a 25% local match, Mr. Chair. We know the money's tight, and when I brought it to the Little Fork Watershed, they were able to kind of pull this together, so we do have a little bit of a different number, so that's what the DE is does, Mr. Chair. Again, to the bill, I guess as amended, Mr. Chair, this is a kind of a real big safety issue for my community in northern Kanawha County. This is just outside, or actually inside of the city of New London, which again is a beautiful, small, Mayberry-type kind of a community that I am so proud of because they have done so many cool things with that community. And recently what came to me is the dangerous levels of the nitrogen, I think, that's the hydrogen sulfide gas that's accumulating, and it's coming out in the springtime that is causing a lot of issues there locally. And I recently became aware of this and wanted to bring it to you because I'm very concerned about our health aspects, Mr. Chair. So alongside of me today is our mayor from New London. I'll have him explain the project.
Welcome, Mayor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Hi, my name is John Dahl. I'm the mayor of New London. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, as the mayor of New London, which is a community of about 1,300 population, 15 miles north of the city of Wilmer, for several decades, the residents and business owners in my community have been negatively impacted by hydrogen sulfide gas emissions coming from Lake Monongalia. Without getting too technical, our issues is due to the low oxygen levels in the lake, which allows certain undesirable bacteria to thrive. Bacteria creates hydrogen sulfide, which is one of the byproducts which is commonly referred to as rotten egg gas. In the wintertime, when the ice covers the entire lake, this gas is unable to be escape into the air so that it becomes more concentrated in the water over the winter months. Then when spring arrives and thaws the ice and the water starts flowing over the New London Dam, it releases the harmful hydrogen sulfide gas into the air, which in significant concentration, depending on that year, the gas cloud can blanket the whole community for several weeks in the spring. For several decades, past and present, community leaders have sought help in addressing this issue. 20 years ago, the city worked with the MPCA and the University of Minnesota and the DNR to do a major study of this issue. The study documented the gas concentrations up to 133 times the state allowed for safe standards. At times, it has become strong enough to discolor and peel paint from area buildings. Hydrogen sulfate gas does not produce an offensive smell. Prolonging exposure to it can also cause respiratory issues, headaches, and neurological damage. 20 years ago, the DNR tried to add oxygen to the lake using a traditional aeration to address the issue, but those aerations were not effective, and those efforts were discontinued for many years. We resigned ourselves to enduring the hydrogen sulfide emissions because they were no visible options available to address this persistent issue. That is until the Middle Fork Crow River District informed us of a new solution called nanobubble technology, which has shown documented positive results with addressing issues like the ones we're facing in our community. The handouts provided to you will explain the nanobubbles, how they work. They will succeed in traditional aeration methods where they fail. The Watershed District has helped facilitate ongoing discussions about nanobubble technology with stakeholders such as the DNR, the Minnesota Board of Water, Soil Resources, the MPCA, Federal EPA, University of Minnesota, and Canduva County. They are now at the point where only the lack of significant funding is holding us back from addressing our ongoing air quality issues. When we met with Representative Baker in January and shared about the dangerous levels of the H2S in our community, he quickly drafted the bill that we're considering today. We recently learned about more negative health impacts of the gas releasing, which added a new urgency to the situation. To put it bluntly, we need your help. We are a rural community with without the kind of tax base available to shoulder the funds needed to undertake this project locally. The Watershed District has offered to finance a local contribution of 25% towards the total cost of the system. But they are similarly a small organization with a large rural limited tax base. Because of these financial limitations, for the sake of the health and safety and the welfare of those living and working in the City of New London, I humbly ask the committee for their help in solving our ongoing air quality issues at long last. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, committee, for your time and consideration today.
Thank you, Mayor. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd just like to comment briefly that New London is a very, very picturesque small town, very dependent on tourism in the summer. And it's pretty hard to have tourists come into town if the town stinks. So, and I actually, full disclosure, taught in New London for 35 years. Mayor Dahl, how long have you lived in the New London Spicer area?
Most of my life.
Who was your favorite seventh grade history teacher?
I have to say you.
Thank you.
So maybe a question for you, Representative Baker. Can you just double check this with the PFA and MMB to make sure that the technology is bondable Yes, cost for us so that we could consider this as we move forward?
We will do that. We did ask that question to the manufacturers when we had a meeting with them, but we will double check and make sure that that is an accurate statement. So okay. Thank you very much.
Seeing no other, Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. Murphy and Zubaker, how long has this technology been around? You may have answered that before. I wasn't paying attention.
You know what, Mr. Mayor, do you know that question?
I believe it's been around for a little more than 7 years and has been a the company that had did this technology has won awards worldwide, and their biggest accomplishment was a community outside of Los Angeles that had the exact same problem as we did, but not at the same levels we did. They had theirs were much lower, and they cleared it up in a very quick manner. Relatively speaking, they actually had to evacuate their town residents and pay for hotel costs. We haven't gotten to that point, but it's something that they took on and did.
Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it sounds like this is a proven technology.
Mayor Dahl.
Yes, it's been a proven technology.
Thank you.
Quick closing comments, Representative Baker.
Real quick, Mr. Chair, again, we knew that we had an issue with the big stink back in 2002, but the technology has only been around for the last 5 to 7 years is what I recall now. So we are certainly asking for this help. Again, we brought everything we could to this thing to try to make it as tight as we could. I will double check on that to make sure for verification. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Baker.
Thank you.
One second here.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I take a little offense to the big stink until 2002. That's when I left.
That wasn't intended, but maybe it's a coincidence. I don't know.
Next on the agenda, we have Representative Davids, House File 4906. Welcome, Representative Davids. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill has to do with the historic Forestville Bridge project. The bridge needs to be renovated and basically put back. The abutments are shot, and what it does to the big, we're asking for $1.993 million. And it crosses, the bridge crosses the Root River. And if you don't walk across the bridge, you have to go 10 miles to get to the other side. So it would become a walking bridge. We need it for safety. It had failed inspection, and it's been closed to vehicles. So I have Mr. David Kelleher with me, and I have the park manager with me. I'd like to turn over to Mr. Kelleher. And if you'll notice, members, on the top there, you've got the Minnesota Historic Society, DNR, and Fillmore County all support this project and are working together on it.
Sergeant Kelleher, welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm David Kelleher from the Minnesota Historical Society, and thank you, Representative Davids, for introducing the bill. And I just want to emphasize what Representative Davids just mentioned, that this is a partnership between Fillmore County, which currently owns the bridge, and the Department of Natural Resources, which operates the state park, Forestville Mystery Cave State Park, and the Minnesota Historical Society, which operates Historic Forestville Historic Site. And you can't get there from here without this bridge. It's the key connection, and it, as Representative David said, it's a safety matter, not only because we don't want this really important historic bridge to fall into the Root River, but we don't want to have a medical emergency for one of our visitors or a park visitor and have emergency services not be able to cross the bridge. So we would appreciate the support for this project. I would also mention that this is a future connector for the Root River Trail. Once the Root River Trail makes it down this way in future years, that will be the connection from the trail to the state park. So without this connector, you would hit a dead end coming up to the park. And I'll ask Matt, the historic site manager, if he has anything to add.
Welcome, please identify yourself and proceed.
Matt Item, I'm the manager of Historic Forestville, which is located within Forestville Mystery Cave State Park. The state park sees about 125,000 visitors each year, so there are 125,000 prospective users of this bridge, which also includes over 7,000 horses. We are the most populated horse campground in the state. Just a short history of bridges at Forestville. This is the third bridge. The first two were made of wood, built in 1856 and 1888. This bridge was built in 1899, which would make it 125 years old this summer. I just would also like to say that I'd appreciate the support. I appreciate the support of Representative Davids and of all of you.
Thank you. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Davids, is this the project that I think that applied for LCCMR last year?
Representative Davids.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, yes, that is correct.
And
Chair Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, so is this the total cost or is this partial? Is this 50% or is this the total cost?
Dr. Kelleher.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, this is the total cost for bridge rehabilitation and abutment repair because the abutments are failing as well.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm just trying, you know, you mentioned the multiple jurisdictions here. So it's a grant, a bonding grant to the DNR. And then they would own the bridge and the Historical Society owns the property near the bridge, and Fillmore County doesn't have any part of this. It just happens to be in Fillmore County.
Dr. Kelleher.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, currently this is a county highway. So the bridge is part of the county highway system, County Road 118. They own it for now. We are continuing conversations between the three organizations to see who will do what in the future, and those discussions are ongoing.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there could be a transfer of county transportation ownership to the DNR or the Historical Society. Will this appropriation affect that, or is that a separate, is that contingent on this, or is it?
Mr. Chair.
Director Kelleher.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen. I think that the way we wrote the bill, it includes the DNR for now, and we'll continue the conversation. I think one of the challenges with this, a catch-22, is that we can't apply for transportation funds because this will not be used for vehicular traffic in the future. So if it becomes a trail or a component of a trail, then the logical owner is the DNR to make sure this is part of that trail system. But we're not quite there yet.
Chair Hansen, you're good?
Yeah, I think we'll have to just keep talking about it.
Yeah. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I do have an affinity for historic bridges, and thought I'd make you aware that in session today, Representative McDonald will be dropping a bill that provides a fund of $5 million for historic bridges. So might be another source of funding if that happens to pass. Certainly this is an important bridge, particularly because of the legislative district that it's in. I'll just stay at that. I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name. The gentleman that I don't know.
Matt.
Okay. Matt, you mentioned horses. I mean, are these horses that are brought in by campers, or does we don't own any horses there, do we?
We don't own any horses. They're campers' horses.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. To any, without the bridge, there is not a direct connection between the state park and the historic site, requiring a detour of 10 miles. Just picturing where the horses are going to ride, where the bikes are going to go. What kind of detour? Is it dirt roads? Is it communities? What's it going to be?
Mr. Matt.
Sorry.
Gravel roads. It takes about a half an hour by car.
By car. But any of the, Mr. Chair, sorry. But any of the users, if they're the trail users, I'm assuming this is going to become a trail. That's its way to go. If this wasn't there, it's a half hour by car, but it puts a long ride out of the way.
Yeah, they can't.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So you know the questions. Quick close of comments, Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a very important project that basically connects the state park and the historical site. Thank you, members.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, Representative Hemison Yeager, House File 3754. Welcome, please proceed.
Good afternoon. Thanks for your attention today. I am here for House File 3754. Basically, it's a $10 million ask for the City of Woodbury's South Shop. Woodbury is a rapidly growing community, and as such, we have an increased demand for public services. This is also putting a strain on our existing facilities. What is most exciting about this is how much I appreciate the collaboration between our Washington County Commissioners and our City of Woodbury working together on this. And I would like to have my County Commissioner introduce herself and proceed with some more details. Thank you.
Welcome, Commissioner. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Hi, thank you. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. My name is Michelle Clausen. I am the Washington County Commissioner. I represent District 5, that is in Foley within the limits of the City of Woodbury. I am here to support House File 3754, which provides $10 million in state funds to develop, expand, and combine two adjacent facilities in the southeast corner of Woodbury. The Washington County Public Works Building, also known as the South Shop, that was built in 1978, and the Environmental Center, that was built in 2007. The City of Woodbury has seen a significant growth for decades and is currently the sixth largest city in Minnesota. As a result of this growth, the Public Works South Shop is far beyond its capacity. Half of the snowplow fleet is stored at a rented off-site facility. Conditions such as these will only worsen as the City of Woodbury continues to grow, and I had heard that it's at 115,000 possibility coming in the next 5 years. This project involves our multi-purpose public service campus. It leverages a public and private partnership with Xcel Energy as they have a new substation on this campus to accommodate the recent growth in Woodbury. Additionally, it is a potential site for a new water tower, which will ensure efficient and clean water delivery. Furthermore, with the expansion of the existing Environmental Center, there is an opportunity to receive, store, and process community yard waste. The proposed project will improve county operations and will allow the county and the city to meet the needs of this very beautiful community. The potential multi-purpose campus will have a profound regional impact. Roadways can be more efficiently maintained and improved our regional transportation system. This campus will maintain the future Metro Gold Line BRT operations through its agreement with Metro Transit. Thank you for your time and consideration. I encourage the committee to support growing communities in the East Metro.
Thank you, Commissioner. Members, any questions? I see none. Any closing comments, Representative?
I just want to again say thank you very much for the attention. I will again reiterate that I really appreciate the regional approach to this, looking at Gold Line Authority in there, XL, the new water tower site, Environmental Center. It really is indicative, I think, of Woodbury becoming a regional leader. So, I, again, appreciate your attention. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Hemison Yeager. Next on the agenda, House File 3759, Chair Howard. And Chair Howard, I understand you have an amendment for reference, the DE1 amendment, so please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Yes, I do have a DE1 to get the bill in the shape that we prefer.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee. What you have before you is a bonding bill request for the City of Richfield for Nicollet Avenue reconstruction, a major thoroughfare through not only Richfield but the region. And I think I will turn it over in light of time to my testifiers to provide more information. Thank you.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Lee and committee members. My name is Katie Rodriguez, and I'm the city manager for Richfield. I'd like to start by pointing out a few things about the project, Nicollet Avenue project, and why we need help funding it. As you can see from the pictures that we provided, The sidewalks are directly adjacent to the roadway and very narrow. They become even more narrow when there's snow, like today. Also, there are higher traffic speeds, deteriorating roadway, curbs, and sidewalks. All of these issues become even more problematic when you understand how busy it is along the 1.4-mile project area. There are two schools, including Holy Angels, three churches, 13 small businesses, more than 100 residential properties, a Hennepin County library, the Richfield Community Center, with a very popular all-inclusive playground, and Richfield High School is just four blocks to the west. Nicollet Avenue is the most dangerous road in Richfield, yet more than 850 pedestrians and cyclists cross each day. Nicollet Avenue serves as a key regional connection between Bloomington and downtown Minneapolis. Traffic along the corridor is primarily regional and pass-through. Only 10% of vehicle trips are local. Now, why are we here asking for funding for this project? Richfield is tapped out when it comes to regional transportation projects. We have invested a lot in our local roads, and we wouldn't be here today if that's all we had to fund. It is the regional roadway projects that we are increasingly funding at higher levels, and that is breaking the bank. In the last 20 years, Richfield has contributed $42 million to state and county road projects. That was over half of our total spending on transportation, even though state and county roads make up only a little of over a quarter of the roadway in and around Richfield. For example, had MnDOT not secured federal funding for the 494 project, Richfield's local cost share was estimated to be $20 million. That's 11 times our local MSA budget, our annual budget. Of course, we are thrilled that these projects are getting done, and we've tried to be good partners. The planned investments to Nicollet Avenue will make this important corridor safer and more effective for all modes. However, it isn't fair to our taxpayers to continually fund larger and larger proportions of these regional projects. We need some help. Thank you, and City Engineer Joe Powers and I are available for questions.
Thank you, members. Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Rep. Howard. Not being from this area, City Manager Rodriguez, does the Met Council help you guys at all anywhere in this?
Not for transportation projects like this, no.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No transportation at all?
Manager Rodriguez.
Sorry.
Thank you. We have secured federal funding through the regional transportation, it's more intimidating being down here. through the regional solicitation. Yes, we have tried to do that as often as possible. And this year we put in for five projects. So our engineers have become almost professional fundraisers trying to secure federal and state and county projects.
Representative Scraba.
That's it. Thank you, Chair.
And so, Manager Rodriguez, along that line then, when you mentioned five, so are there five other transportation projects that you're looking for federal funding? That's why this project is not one of them? Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Joe Powers. I'm the city engineer for the city of Richfield. This corridor specifically, due to its particular designation as an arterial corridor, is not eligible for regional solicitation funding. And so that is why we didn't submit any funding, nor did Hennepin County submit any funding for this corridor under regional solicitation.
Then the county or the city is left to consider this for themselves then? Is that the case, Mr. Powers?
Yes, that's correct.
And then just to the language real quickly before we move on. So is this a grant to the city of Richfield or Hennepin County?
To the city of Richfield.
City of Richfield, okay. Thank you very much. Closing comments, Chair Howard.
Chair Lee, members, thank you for the opportunity to present this important bill and look forward to discussion as we proceed.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, we have House File 4736, Representative Clardy. Welcome, Representative Clardy. Please proceed.
Alrighty, thank you. Thank you, Chair Lee and committee for seeing this bill today. So last year, this committee provided $2 million in design fund for this exciting project that I'm going to tell you about. So thank you for the support from last year. House File 4736 before you today builds on the design that was funded by you. So we're seeking $10 million in appropriation to Dakota County, and it will be matched fully by Dakota County. That $10 million will be fully matched for natural area restoration, accessibility, and inclusivity improvements to Dakota County's 57-acre park that's in West St. Paul. Thompson County Park is located in the most diverse part of the district, and has a variety of habitats to include hill, savanna, and shady woodlands. So it's about 11 minutes from the Capitol, and it's a natural oasis in this urban area that welcomes visitors to the beautiful Thompson Lake, surrounded by scenic trails and an accessible playground. It's an exciting destination for people throughout the region. This request, which I would like to emphasize again, is matched in the equal amount by the county funding and would allow for accessibility to the natural area improvement and to the park in Dakota County. And I'd like to introduce, where are you? There you go. I'd like to introduce Dakota County Commissioner and Board Chair, Joe Atkins, and he'll walk you through the project.
Welcome back to the House, Commissioner. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's good to be home. Spent a lot of time in this committee room. My name is Joe Atkins. I am the chair of the Dakota County Board. I know some of the key things you're going to want to hear. One is that this is our number one priority as far as parks and accessibility goes, Mr. Chairman, and it is 100% matched by Dakota County. That's already been approved. This will become our most inclusive, our most accessible park in our entire Dakota County system. I would argue that it will be the most inclusive and accessible park in Minnesota. We're just verifying that as we go. There's over 1 million people who live within 5 miles of this park. The key components that you should be aware of, first off, is we've got a lovely building there. It's the Thompson Center, the Dakota Lodge. Like I said, lovely building, but terribly inaccessible. It's available privately for rent. It's got the senior citizens group that from ISD 197 that has access to it. But we just put in this awesome, accessible, 100% inclusive playground, and we don't have the restrooms and the facilities for folks and the kids and the families to go to it. In addition to that, and I just want to make sure that I get all my facts right with respect to that, Mr. Chairman, we would expand the building to better serve park visitors. It's next to the inclusive play area. It'll have accessible restrooms, flexible gathering spaces, all-terrain vehicles or all-terrain wheelchairs that are available to kids and families and adults who need it. That's not all that we're talking about with respect to accessibility, Mr. Chairman and members. We've also got an accessible pollinator promenade, sensory garden and stream restoration, 100% ADA accessible with a trail that runs through it, an accessible paddle launch, accessible ADA approved or ADA accessible natural surface trail connected to our river-to-river greenway, which connects all the way from Representative Hansen's district through West St. Paul over to Mendota Heights to Representative Ryer's district. And we'd like to give folks access to that. We've also intend to add a natural play area that would go along, a nature-based play that would go next to the playground or near the playground. Again, the emphasis is on the fact that we've got the full match, 100% match, and we want to build on and thank you for the $2 million that you were kind enough to grant us this last time around. I've got just to show what a high priority this is, we've brought our senior project manager, Ms. Tony Watzka, our communications director, Mary Beth Schubert. We've got online our parks director, Nikki Geisler. We've got our representative, Dan Dwight. This is a really big deal, Mr. Chair. And as Mr. Watzka can confirm if you want, we've already got the design figured out, the preliminary design done. We'll have the final design this coming spring and be in the ground already next summer. So I know that you like to get projects going, Mr. Chairman. And with that, I'd be happy to stand for any questions or concerns that members of the committee, other than Commissioner Representative Erdahl, may have.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Atkins. You mentioned that this is your number one priority in parks and accessibility. Now, is that number one of all your projects, or do you have other number ones in other areas?
Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Erdahl. By the way, thank you for your service. It was a real pleasure and honor to serve with you when we were here together.
We'll have a cheeseburger to celebrate.
We will have. You can tell who the old-timers are because there's an inside joke there. Thank you for the question. It is our number one parks and accessibility project, our number one priority as far as road projects, I-35 and County Road 50. Those are the two that have been identified as top priorities for us. We've got several others that are important projects, but these are the ones that have been identified at the top of our list.
Right. Representative Erdahl.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Scraba.
Chair Lee, Commissioner, Representative, I've used this park a couple of different times, walking my dog. Recently, I went across 52 and whatever the other road is to get down to the river, the dog park down below, and came back, and I saw a lot of trails that are dirt. And I don't know if this project, the $10 million, has anything to do with trail advancement or anything. I think what you have is really good. I mean, I'm impressed with it, and I start in the morning when no one's there, and then I come back and I'm like, where all these people come from? But it's a very well used park the times I've been there. But I'm just curious if you're going to use any trail development other than real close where the, again, lots of kids playing on that playground and by the parking lot. I'm assuming that's where that pollinator thing or wherever that's going. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Atkins.
Chairman and Representative Scraba, first off, I commend you for using, if you're going all the way down to the dog park, you're a hell of a hiker. Because it's about an 8% grade coming up all the way from the river from that dog park and up.
Coming back, I felt it.
Going down is one thing. Coming back is another.
Exactly.
The short answer is yes, some of those will be paved in an ADA-accessible fashion. Others will remain as a natural surface. And then the pollinator promenade in particular will have a natural surface trail that will also be accessible.
Representative Scraba.
That's all. Thank you, Chair Lee.
Thanks for the question.
Seeing no other questions, closing comments, Representative Calagri.
Thank you for consideration of this bill. Accessibility is just like growing as our baby boomers are growing too. So thank you for considering this park and the regional importance.
Thank you, Representative Clary. Next on the agenda is our last bill for the day, House File 3710, Representative Edelson. And Representative Edelson, I understand you have an amendment coded A1 for reference, so please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do what the A1. Okay, so the A1 just expands so to a municipal campus, which would, depending on the name of what we call the fire station, would just be inclusive of that. So, thank you.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So House Bill 3710 is a bonding request for $5.3 million that for a busy intersection or interchange of Highway 100 and 50th and Vernon. This is one of the most used interchanges in Edina, and I'll let the mayor kind of talk about the numbers of people that approximately use this one, as well as 62, and then we have 494. Those are our three heaviest traveled intersections. So the project aims to improve safety for all users, improve Highway 100 access points, new ADA compliant pedestrian ramps. Right now they're too narrow. It improves safety operations. It will limit construction impacts to the public. It would also, if you look in your packets, you should have this handout here. You will see that the fire station, we are going to be placing a fire station here. I just want to note for the regional implications of this project, the Edina Fire Station, of the 6,000 calls for mutual aid, 867 of them were for mutual aid calls. The total cost of the proposed project is estimated to be $21.3 million, and partners on this project include Hennepin County and MnDOT, which our city has been working in close coordination with. Again, so the bonding request before you is for $5.3 million, and with that, Mr. Chair, I would like to go to my mayor, Edina, Mayor Jim Hovland.
Welcome, Mayor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Jim Hovland, Mayor of Edina, Minnesota. Nice to be with all of you as well. And so this project started with Hennepin County. If you've gotten off on that exit off Highway 100 at 50th and Vernon City Halls to the east, just to the west as you go towards Devaney's, and there's a Holiday Station there, there's a bridge, county bridge over a railroad track there that runs north and south into St. Louis Park and in South Herd Savage. And the county started this project with the idea that they wanted to replace that bridge, which was one of the most efficient in Hennepin County. So of that $21.3 million in total project cost, a little less than half of it is a county taking that bridge down and replacing that bridge. That caused us to think about how we could improve the ingress and egress on 169 on Highway 100, because that used to be where 169 came through. So that's why we've got six entrances and exits on and off Highway 100 there. So we've got the county involved. We'd like to have the state involved. We've got the federal government involved with some of the funding, plus local funding. So it's an interesting combination of potential state bonding money, county money, also federal money, and then local match money that we're doing. We've got 91% of the people that come into Edina every day to work are commuting into the city, and it's roughly about 41,000 people a day. So when people get off at Highway 100 and 50th in Vernon, about 15,000 are going west and about 20,000 going east a day. So there's a significant amount of not just regional traffic, but traffic coming in from all over the metropolitan area and from all over the state, frankly. So with this trunk highway and these improvements that we want to make, which would also allow us to allow pedestrians to get safely across Highway 100 and be more connected between east and west Edina, we think it's a terrific opportunity. And then once we clean up all of this kind of little mini spaghetti junction activity at 100 and 50th, it'll create enough room for us to work with MnDOT to expand our city campus there. You know where the city hall is. If we can expand the campus a little bit to the east towards Highway 100, there's quite a bit of land in there where we think we could put in a third fire station. So, you know, in a fully developed town, nothing's easy. And so you're looking for spaces you can do things, and this would give us an opportunity to work with MnDOT then to clear that whole area up, make better ingress and egress off Highway 100, make it all safer, allow us to get pedestrians and bicyclists safely back and forth across Highway 100, and do a really significant piece of work there, and then possibly have enough room for that fire station that we want to build to serve Northeast Edina. So love to have you as a partner, along with the county, along with the federal government, along with our local funding sources, and we've asked for $5.3 million in bonding requests for this project, and hope that you will see the wisdom of all of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Members, any questions? Seeing none, any closing comments, Representative Edelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, thank you and all to the members for your consideration for this project. Thank you.
Thank you both.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, members.
Members, our next meeting is on Wednesday, March 27th, and on the agenda is more hearing of GO bills on an informational basis. With that, this meeting is adjourned.